This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper says the U.S. and South Korean militaries are considering a reduction in training exercises on the Korean Peninsula as South Korea struggles to contain a coronavirus outbreak. Esper told reporters at the Pentagon that he and the U.S. and South Korea are considering scaling back command post training due to concerns about the coronavirus. 13 members of South Korea's armed forces have tested positive for coronavirus. The number of coronavirus cases has jumped to 833 in South Korea, and the death toll has now risen to 7. The U.S. has raised its travel advisories for South Korea and Japan, with fears across the globe that the two Asian nations could possibly become another hotbed of infections outside of China, where the virus originated. The Trump administration is putting together an urgent budget request to deal with the coronavirus outbreak. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has the story.
Moving beyond Asia into Europe and the Middle East, the WHO's chief says it's concerning, but
using the word pandemic now does not fit the facts, but it may certainly cause fear.
Here in the U.S., Anthony Fauci at the National Institutes of Health says the semantics don't matter much.
We're not going to do anything different if you call it a pandemic or not.
He says work's continuing on several possible vaccines.
There are going to be a lot of shots on goal for a vaccine. Hopefully one or more of them will be successful.
The White House is preparing an emergency budget request to address the virus. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And for details on much more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. or on the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. President Trump is on a 36-hour whirlwind trip to India, his first official state visit to the country, which has poured on the pageantry for him with stops at the Taj Mahal and Gandhi's home. We get more from AP correspondent Julie Walker.
Namaste. At a Namaste Trump rally with India's prime minister at a huge cricket stadium that undoubtedly is the biggest audience the president has ever addressed, Trump spoke of a trade deal he's been hoping for but not gotten.
He's a very tough negotiator.
One thing he did get.
Our representatives will sign deals to sell over $3 billion in the absolute finest state-of-the-art military helicopters and other equipment to the Indian Armed Forces.
And he got a lot of applause when he said the U.S. was working with India's neighbor Pakistan to crack down on militants operating on the Pakistani border. I'm Julie Walker.
Legal action has been taken in the tragic death of basketball superstar Kobe Bryant. AP correspondent Shelley Adler has that story.
The widow of Kobe Bryant has sued the owner of the helicopter that crashed in fog and killed her husband and her 13-year-old daughter last month. The wrongful death lawsuit filed by Vanessa Bryant in Los Angeles says the pilot was careless and negligent by flying in cloudy conditions January 26 and should have aborted the flight. The pilot was among the 9 people killed in the crash. The lawsuit was filed as a public memorial service for Brian and his daughter was being held at Staples Center. I'm Shelley Antler.
A prominent Tanzanian journalist arrested in July was released Monday after pleading guilty of tax evasion and money laundering in a case critics had said was politically motivated. Charles Colby reports.
After his release Monday, Kabendera said he sends his appreciation to Tanzanians for the love and support they have given him since his arrest. Following his arrest on July 29th, his lawyer, Jebra Kambole, said his client faced the charges in connection with an article in The Economist in which Kabendera said President Magufuli was bulldozing Tanzania's freedom. Kabendera was charged with tax evasion, money laundering, and organized crime, all non-bailable offenses. Under term of plea deal with prosecutors, Kabendera pleaded guilt to the tax evasion and money laundering charges while the other charges were dropped. He will now be required to pay fines of more than $100,000. His lawyer, Jebra Kambole, said his client has already paid a portion of the fine while the remainder should be paid within a period of 6 months. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
And a hearing on the United States' request for extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has opened in London. The U.S. has charged Assange with espionage and computer hacking. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Togolese President Faure Gnassingbé wins a decisive re-election victory, but the opposition candidate is rejecting the results.
We don't threat this constitutional court. We know that our public institutions are part of our problem. So we can't rely on them.
Malawi's parliament sets May 19 as the new date for the new court order presidential election. Ugandan police denied Robert Chakulain permission to carry on his public consultations. Lesotho police reject Prime Minister Tabani's claim of immunity in the alleged murder of his estranged wife. And Nigerian Catholic bishops ask Catholics to wear black tomorrow, Ash Wednesday.
We're calling attention to the predicament of our dear country. The hundreds and thousands of innocent men and women who have been senselessly murdered in the last few years.
Matthew Hassan Kuka is Archbishop of the Catholic Diocese of Sokoto, and an exhibition showcasing the life of the late former South African President Nelson Mandela is launched in Johannesburg. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Togolese President Faure Gnassingbé has won a decisive re-election victory, but opposition coalition candidate Abayomi Kojo has rejected the results. According to Togolese Elections Commission, President Gnassingbé, in power for 15 years, won 72% of total votes, while his closest competitor, Kojo, won 18%. The result will be official once they have been confirmed by the country's Supreme Court. Bridget Ajamagbo, the spokesperson for opposition coalition candidate Abayomi Kojo, tells VOA that the opposition vote tally shows their candidate won by a margin of between 57 and 61%, and that Mr. Kojo is ready to form an inclusive government. Ajamagbo says the opposition will mobilize the population to express their displeasure with the results.
We do not accept at all the results. These are very false results, you know.
So, Bridget, if the results that we have are correct, Mr. Faure Gnassingbé won 72% of the vote, and the closest person was your candidate, Abayomi Kojo, with 18%. Yeah. Are you saying these are not correct?
Yeah. First, let me tell you that because that we have to mobilize the population, you know, the voters, and especially countries like America, who have a tradition of democracy, who are very old democracy, they will be possible. Our statement, and they will help democracy to be in our country also.
When you say you're going to mobilize the population, are you suggesting more protests?
They have to make it now that they are not happy with this result.
Are you going to form a government?
Yes, the elected president said it, that he will form a government. He will nominate a prime minister.
If you're not satisfied, why not you go to the court, the constitutional court?
Because going there, but you don't trust this constitutional court. You know that our institutions, our public institutions, are part of our problem. So we can't rely on them. While we'll be go to this court, we'll continue to act, and the elected president will go by nominating a prime minister and a government.
Bridget Ajamagbo is the spokesperson for Togolese opposition coalition candidate Abayomi Kojo. She was speaking with us from the capital, Lome. Malawi's parliament has set May 19, 2020 as the date to hold a court-ordered presidential election. In its February 3rd ruling, the Malawi Constitutional Court nullified the May 2019 presidential election results because of irregularities. It also directed parliament to pass a 50-plus-1 electoral reform bill by yesterday, February 24. The parliament did just that. President Peter Mutharika filed an appeal to the Malawi Supreme Court, arguing that the Constitution Court made a legal error in its ruling. Frank Mwinifumbo is a member of the Opposition Alliance for Democracy Party of Malawi.
Let me start by congratulating the members of Parliament of Malawi for living in compliance with the court judgment, where the Constitutional Court recommended some electoral reforms laws, which have been duly amended and now constitute part of electoral laws of Malawi. And that then makes it possible for Malawi to hold fresh presidential elections, as it was directed by the courts, in 150 days. Let me go further by saying that our parliament went further to adjudicate 19th May as a 2020 as a day of fresh presidential elections. So I must say that all is said, all factors being equal, and these factors are that the president assents to the bills in good time, the government makes provisions to fund the elections.
But some may argue that already there is a date set in the constitution for election. So this May 19 date, does it contradict the date set in the constitution for election?
Yeah, correct. There's that school of thought. People arguing whether these amendments are consistent with the supreme law of the land and the constitution, including the tenures themselves. But I think this is the farthest parliament would go to fit in a situation that was unprecedented. I would like personally believe that the parliament have done its best. This was a complicated matter. But all the same, I want to agree with you that laws don't need to be ambiguous. The laws have to speak to each other. All our structures have to speak to the supreme law of the land. But I want to believe that when the Constitutional Court made those recommendations, they must have thought it over that it would not be in conflict with the Constitution.
So as we talked the last time, I guess there's going to be a lot of political jockeying to make sure that maybe the political parties are ready for election and whether the Elections Commission is going to be ready.
Yeah, these are the trick part of it, because one of the recommendations say that unlike in the past where the president was electing commissioners of the Malawi Electoral Commission, now that responsibility has shifted to the parliament. So we hope that the parliament will do these things within the stipulated period of time to constitute the electoral commissioners and a new Malawi elections chairperson to oversee these elections.
Frank Winifumbo is a member of the Alliance for Democracy Party of Malawi. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Lawyers for Ugandan parliamentarian Rabo Chakulai have petitioned the Electoral Commission to work with the police in resolving issues that might keep their candidate from continuing his presidential campaign consultation. Chakulai, who is popularly known as Bobby Wine, is the presidential candidate for the opposition People Power Movement Party in next year's general election. As part of his efforts to contest in the polls, Bobby Wine began public consultations across the country after the Electoral Commission approved his plans. But he was arrested along with leaders of the People Power Movement and its supporters. VOA's Peter Clotty spoke with one of Bobby Wine's lead attorneys, Matthias Mpunga, about the petition.
Well, their petition to the Electoral Commission to intervene is because at the legislature of NA undertaking that involved in elections under the Presidential Elections Act, the law under which we are undertaking consultation as the People Power Team. And we have had these evidences from the police without any recourse to the law. And we have asked the Electoral Commission to intervene and prevail over the police in matters relating to electoral consultation. And we are yet to get their feedback.
In the petition, you called on the Electoral Commission to convene a meeting with the police so you address all these challenges or concerns they may have before the consultations resume. I thought a similar meeting was held a few weeks back. So what is different this time?
Yeah, truthfully, a meeting was held prior, and as far as we are concerned, there are no issues pending. But because the police is being used as a walking stick by the regime, it does not want to refer to the issues we discussed. It wants to make issues appear as though they are unresolved matters, which we do not know, which is why we did ask the Electoral Commission to intervene, and before the commission, the police tables what it claims to be pending issues that we have no knowledge of. But we are also aware that actually the police is bidding time because Ms. Mzeren is worried about this consultation, and they're using the police to try and bid time and postpone any possible interaction of Mr. Chiaguranyi with the public.
How do you want the Electoral Commission to pave way for Bobi Wine or Robert Kyagulanyi to proceed with his consultations? Because it appears that his supporters could be in danger of arrest if these issues that the police have are not appropriately addressed.
First of all, we are not aware of the issues police is raising. The issues being raised are only a figment of the police's imagination, and we want them to bring to the fore, to the public, these issues, because as far as we are concerned, we are not in violation of any law. We are not aware of any requirements, physical, legal, or otherwise.
So what legal recourse do you have if the Electoral Commission is unable to rein in supposedly the police, as you have petitioned them to do, to meet them and to pave the way for you to resume the consultations in a run-up to next year's elections?
The recourse is the other civil courts, and then, of course, the court of last resort, which is the general public, that is not only tired, but fed up with the status quo.
Matthias Mpunga is one of the lead attorneys for Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Kyagulanyi. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 25th. Daybreak Africa time, 16:30 past the hour. Kenya and Germany have agreed to partner in the transfer of technical skills and education focusing on applied sciences. The two nations announced their plan Monday during a bilateral meeting at State House in Nairobi. As Maureen Ojiambo reports, visiting German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier has also promised to help Kenya fight low-cost invasion as well as terrorism.
Kenya and Germany have laid down several initiatives. Key among them is to have Germany assist Kenya in setting up an applied sciences university. And European nations' commitment to continue supporting technical and vocational training institutes in the country. Speaking in State House Nairobi, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta said that Kenya is developing an elaborate system for technical and vocational training to bridge in identified skills gaps, saying science specialized universities will help empower Kenyan innovators.
I also note with appreciation that the government of the Federal Republic of Germany has offered to support new programs through the Kenyan-German initiative to promote youth employment, and they have offered to share experiences and resources to help us transform the manufacturing and agricultural sectors, as well as the blue economy, through technical and vocational education training. And subsequently, under this initiative, three centers of excellence have been established. Germany will co-finance with Kenya, a phase one at a total cost of 26.4 million euros.
Germany head of state Frank Walter said that his country is keen in partnering with Kenya on matters technology that will see state set up applied science universities for Kenya.
Herr Präsident, Sie haben auf die wirtschaftlichen Verbindungen zwischen unseren beiden.
Mr. President, you pointed out in your introductory statement that the economic ties between both our countries are well developed, and you hinted at the importance of those ties. Indeed, Kenya is the most important economic partner country of Germany in the east of Africa, and we have a project portfolio of 500 million euros, which make your country one of the priority countries of Development Corporation of Germany.
Mr. Frank also said his country will support Africa in combating the current desert locust invasion, which he said threatens the continent's food security. He says Germany will provide 3 million euros to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization to support ongoing efforts to defeat the locust invasion in several African nations, including Kenya.
You have gone through several serious droughts. You have suffered severe spells of heavy rainfall. And this is but one of the reasons why the German government continues to make food security and agriculture a continuing priority of German development cooperation. We are also contributing, helping to fight the severe impact of the locust infestation on the African continent, East Africa and in Kenya.
Already, 17 counties out of 47 in Kenya are affected by locusts. President Uhuru Kenyatta says the situation is being managed and the damage may not negatively impact the country's harvest.
It has been a serious problem. We have done everything that we can do. We strongly believe, though, that as a result of some of the mitigation that we have done, the damage to our harvest may not be as bad as it was predicted.
The Germany leader, who is in the country for a three-day state visit, is accompanied by representatives of the Germany business, education and sports sector. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Lesotho police say they disagreed with Prime Minister Thomas Thabane's defense lawyers that the Prime Minister cannot be charged while he remains in office. Deputy Police Commissioner Paseka Mokete, who is also the lead investigator in the alleged Thabane murder case, says the Constitution provides no criminal protection for the Prime Minister. His remarks came after the Prime Minister's defense lawyers argue in court that Mr. Thabane cannot be charged for his alleged role in the murder of his estranged wife. He is currently away in South Africa, where his lawyers say he's receiving medical attention for an undisclosed ailment. Deputy Police Commissioner Mokete tells VOA's Peter Clotty that his organization will consider extradition if it determines that the Prime Minister is trying to evade justice.
I don't agree with that assertion in the first place, because actually the Constitution of Lesotho is very clear that the person who is immune from criminal prosecution is the Majesty. His Majesty King is the only one who is actually immune from criminal prosecution. So I don't understand that argument.
Does that mean that you are waiting for the Prime Minister to come to court before the three charges that the police plan to level against him will be carried out?
Yeah, that was, we are expecting. We're expecting him to appear before the court like any other person, because there is no immunity whatsoever that he enjoys.
So how long, what time frame or period are you giving the Prime Minister, because he's out of the country at the moment seeking medical attention, how long will it take for you to expect his return to begin this process in court?
Well, that will be determined by the Office of Director of Public Prosecution.
Some people are suggesting that since the police work with other police jurisdictions, perhaps there could be a possible extradition if he fails to return to the country on medical grounds to face prosecution. What is your take on that?
Yes, that's what we normally do, especially when we realize that he's trying to evade justice.
How are people in Lesotho, Basotho people, how are they reacting to this case so far that you've heard?
Well, this is the moment that they have been waiting for, majority to all of them, and a few people who say that these charges that we have preferred against the Prime Minister are politically motivated. But majority of the Basotho nation are very happy that at least they know what had happened to the former Prime Minister's wife, the late Prime Minister's wife.
Looking at the charges that you have been considering, does that support the investigations that you conducted as the lead investigator based on the murder or the killing of the former wife of the Prime Minister?
Oh, yes. The evidence that we have collected actually implicates the Prime Minister. And all the charges that we have preferred actually are informed by the evidence that we have collected.
Paseka Moketo is the Deputy Commissioner of the Lesotho Police. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotte from the capital, Maseru. Nigerian Catholic bishops have asked Catholics in Nigeria to wear black tomorrow, Ash Wednesday, to mourn what the bishops say are victims of kidnapping and other violent crimes in Nigeria. Archbishop Matthew Hassan Kuka of the Catholic Archdiocese Diocese of Sokoto says Ash Wednesday will be a day of prayer and also to protest insecurity in Nigeria. The bishop said in their statement that without security, there can be no peace, and without peace, there can be no development.
The first thing is that this is an initiative of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Nigeria, but also our appeal goes beyond the confines of Christianity. We even extend this invitation to our Muslim brothers, non-Christians, traditional worshippers, because we're calling attention to the predicament of our dear country. The hundreds and thousands of innocent men and women who have been senselessly murdered in the last few years. And so this is a solemn occasion for us to pause for a prayer, asking God to have mercy on their souls, but most importantly, to bring peace to our country.
The bishop's statement goes on to say, Bishop, that without security, there can be no peace. And without peace, there can be no development or national growth. When you talk to the Nigerian government, they say that they're fighting those who are responsible, particularly Boko Haram. Are you saying that you are not pleased with the way the fight is going against Boko Haram?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we probably do not deny the fact that government and the security agencies are not doing their best. But given what is behind us, we are pretty convinced that the best so far is not good enough. This is where we do not know what is the conversation between the international community and the government of Nigeria. But we believe that with a more coordinated and concerted effort, we really should have been able to bring Boko Haram to its knees. But right now, it is Boko Haram and its and other various violent groups, especially in northern Nigeria, that are literally taunting the nation, taunting the military, and have literally brought the country almost to a halt, because right now, the entire length and breadth of this country, there is hardly any spot where any citizen can claim that they feel safe.
The bishop talked about repeated barbaric executions of Christians by Boko Haram insurgents. Do you feel that this violence is targeted only against Christians or Nigerians in general?
Well, I think the truth of the matter is that what we now face has literally spun out of control. But in the early years of Boko Haram, Christians were targeted, our churches were targeted. And when you gruesomely and brutally murder or slaughter Christians outwardly, and you choose a day like Christmas Day to do that, you're showing very clearly, you know, that you have more than just a passing grouse against Christianity and Christians. And secondly, the fact that this fight has gone out of control to now take on the entire Nigerian society, both Christian, Muslim, and everybody across the board, we really are not sure where it all fell apart. But clearly, there was a point in which, because the philosophy of Boko Haram itself progresses from the fact that they are against Western religion, and falsely, they've tried to present the impression that Christianity is from the West. And it is to that extent that, you know, they have found Christianity literally to be an agency for all that is Western and so on. So, but where we are now suggests very clearly that Boko Haram, of course, has deteriorated into not just a bandit group. It's more or less a franchise. But the reality of the situation is, by whatever name they are called, the responsibility of the government of the Federal Republic of Nigeria has been and will always be to secure the ordinary people of Nigeria and the borders of Nigeria. Clearly, you don't need a prophet to tell you that that is really not the case as we have it today. So we sympathize with our government. And this is why what we are doing solemnly is not a protest, it's a prayer. And we are praying for the government of Nigeria, we are praying for the security forces of Nigeria, that this evil wind will blow so that we can live our ordinary lives as we've always been.
Matthew Hassan Kuka is Archbishop of the Catholic Diocese of Sokoto. He was speaking with us from Sokoto. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa News. A Tanzanian judge ordered the release of investigative journalist Eric Kabendera from prison on Monday. Kabendera was jailed last year after he criticized President John Magufuli. He pleaded guilty to some charges in order to secure his release. And Togolese President Faure Gnassingbé has won a decisive re-election victory, but opposition coalition candidate Abayomi Ankoje has rejected the results. That is it for this Tuesday, February 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.